Hello, hello. Today we're talking to Kristen from Wayward Home. She's lived on a boat. She currently is traveling in a van. She interviews all these amazing people on her site who live in van living, tiny living, sailboat living, everything you possibly imagine. She's super interesting, and we can't wait to share her story with you guys. Let's go.
Welcome to Fire Drill Podcast, where side hustles, savings, and creativity lead to financial independence. With your hosts, Gwen from Fiery Millennials and Jay from Millennial Boss.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Fire Drill. We are so excited to have Kristen from the Wayward Home here. Welcome, Kristen.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Gwen's here too.
I'm really excited we have Kristen on here because we were talking about having her on like almost 2 years ago. So this is really exciting, the fact that we get to have her on today.
Exactly. I don't know what took us so long. 2 years is a stretch because we've only had the podcast for a year, but it has felt like forever.
Okay, so maybe it was more like 9 months ago instead of, I don't know what year it is. Probably. I don't know what day it is. I'm getting over being sick. I get a pass.
You do. So the reason is because Kristen's story, well, first of all, Kristen has a van. She has a sailboat. I can't wait to figure out what led you to those things in your life. But also you feature a lot of amazing women who are doing these lifestyle design type things, like quitting everything to RV or sailing the world or whatever they're doing. So let's kick it off with that. Can you give everyone, before we dive deeper into your story, the 30-second soundbite of who you are?
Sure. Well, I am Kristen, obviously, and I live in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I'm a journalist and a writer. And I started my website because I wanted to highlight all these ways people are living alternatively. So van life, RVing, sailboats, tiny homes. Because I just noticed that this is really happening right now in our society. So I was like, I need to create a website where everybody can come together, you know, read each other's stories and connect and get inspired. So that's kind of what I'm all about. And that's what the Wayward Home is doing.
So tell us about you. Like, who are you, though? Where did you grow up? Where are you living? What's your story?
So I grew up in Portland, Oregon, and I started out as a radio news reporter, and I did that for 14 years. And then I was laid off, and I was like, oh no, what am I going to do? My career is over. So that was a couple years ago. And then I decided I should just start writing and start figuring out this online stuff. So that's kind of what brought me to blogging. And now I live in San Francisco because I came down here for my dream radio job like 5 years ago. And I'm still here. And I live on a sailboat here and a van and pet sit and house sit and just traveling, you know, the rest of the time. So kind of all over the place.
So you don't necessarily identify as FIRE. So the FIRE movement, financial independence, retire early. You're still working in your day job, but you're more about lifestyle and alternative living. Is that how you would describe your niche?
Yes, but I was laid off from my day job, so I am a digital nomad. And yes, I would love to create passive income sources so that I can one day just not think about working every day and travel more on my sailboat.
Got it. So when were you laid off?
I was laid off in 2016 in March.
So it's been about 2.5 years now.
Yeah, exactly.
So where did all of this alternative living inspiration come from?
So back in 2015, when I still had a job, I met a guy at a housing complex where I lived in a place called Mill Valley near San Francisco. And we were roommates. So I lived in a little cottage and he lived in the main house. And one day we were hiking. So we started out like friends and we were hiking around. And he said, what if we just didn't live in the house anymore? Like, what if we just lived out here? And he kind of pointed to the woods. And I was like, what? Are you crazy? Like, what are you talking about? And he said, how much do you pay in rent? And I said, $1,800 a month. And he times it by 12. And whatever that is, it's like 20,000 something. I was like, whoa, that's a lot of money. And I started really thinking about it. Like, I'm just paying all this money to rent. So he actually took the leap first and he started camping. Like, he moved out, he gave up his house and he started camping and sleeping in his Prius. And I still had my apartment at the time. And then I just was joining him every night. Like, we were having fires, we were cooking dinner and just having a blast. And I was like, why do I have my house? So I gave my 30 days notice and I moved out. And I was like, I'm going to camp and live in this car and pay off all my debt while I have a full-time job. And so it just started this crazy adventure of alternative living.
And when did the sailboat come into play?
So what happened was we lived in the car for 4 months, a Toyota Prius. And after I paid off my debt, I was kind of done with it for a while. So I moved back into a normal housing situation. And then I lost my job. And so I was like, I can't pay rent anymore. So then I moved into my boyfriend's sailboat. So he bought the sailboat after we lived in the car because he had saved so much money so he could buy it with cash.
First of all, let's talk about the car. How do you live in a car? Did you have a gym membership and you shower? Like, how do you practically live in a vehicle?
Yeah, exactly. We both had a gym membership where we'd go to shower and they have tables where you can work at your computer and they have Wi-Fi. And then we would just kind of fold down the back seats and make a little bed. And we would move around every night to different places like campgrounds or marinas or rest stops. And then at night we would hang out in a storage unit where we had a music jam facility. So I would play drums and he would play guitar. And that's how we entertained ourselves after work. So we weren't in the car too much. It was like just to sleep only.
You're musicians. I didn't realize that. That's so cool.
Yeah, we are. We haven't been playing as much lately, but we're going to get back into it.
Jay is a guitarist.
Really? That's awesome.
Okay, that's cool. A real liberal application of guitarist. I sang backup vocals and I know two chords from going to guitar festival with my husband.
Oh, that's so
but
cool.
But I'm on the path to being a musician, sort of.
Yay, congrats. That's cool.
So do you guys gig at all?
No, he used to, but he's been trying to restore this sailboat for 3 years. So he's kind of let music fall to the wayside, but he's going to start playing again soon. Looking forward to that.
And how old are you guys, if you don't mind me asking? You can give it a general age if you'd like.
Oh, it's fine. I'm 37 and he's 48.
Okay. That's what I thought. You're not like 20 somethings living in a car. Like, you guys are established people who have made this lifestyle change.
Totally. Yep.
What was the biggest change that you noticed from downsizing in that way?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, living in the car was pretty shocking at first, just going to have a place that wasn't like my own place. And I was essentially living in his car and using his camping gear. And I was like, oh my gosh, I don't have my own place. Like, what if we don't get along? Like, where will I go? So it was a sense of being like dependent on somebody. And that was a huge change for me initially. And I had a storage unit where I kept all my clothes and I would have to go there every morning before work and like get clothes or try on outfits. And I was in the shipping container and I was like, wow, this is really weird. So it had quite a big adjustment because I'd always had pretty nice apartments and houses, you know, before that. And so it was a huge change, but that was now like 3 years ago. And now I'm really used to it. It was just a matter of changing our lifestyle.
Did you notice any social changes or reactions from family and friends that you didn't expect?
Well, at first with the vehicle, I felt like I didn't really know about the van life thing and I was unaware of it pretty much. So I felt really on my own and I was like, people are going to think I'm so weird if I admit it. So I barely admitted it to anybody. Like, there was one coworker who knew and I slowly told my friends and my family and they thought it was kind of funny. Like, nobody gave me a really bad reaction, but I definitely kept it under wraps and I didn't write about it for at least a year, you know, afterward. And I usually want to write about everything immediately. So I kind of kept it hidden, but now I don't care anymore. It's like, I feel like this alternative living is so out there now that I'm no longer trying to hide it.
Yeah. I feel like when, you know, a couple of years ago, if you're like, yeah, I lived in my car, people are like, oh my gosh, were you broke? Like, were you almost homeless? Could you not afford a place? And now sometimes you talk to people and they're like, oh yeah, yeah, that's cool. Like, how'd you do it? Like, how'd you outfit it? Like, tell me more. And you're not like looked at weird at all.
Exactly. I feel like there's been a huge culture shift just in the past 2 to 3 years. Because I think housing is so unaffordable that a lot of people just don't have a choice and they're just making the best of it. And then other people see that and they're like, I want to do that too. I want to live a life of freedom. And then there's people who do it for that reason. So I think it's becoming just a bigger and bigger thing for a variety of reasons.
Yeah, because people are broke.
Yeah, exactly. People are broke.
Do you have social communities now that you've tapped into and made friends through this van life?
Yeah, mostly online. I've joined a lot of different groups online and I find there's really good camaraderie and connection there. And then I've also, through my website, I've also interviewed and spoken to a lot of people about this. So I feel like I have these virtual friends. I recently found a group of RVers and they actually travel around and they meet up and hang out with each other all over the US. And I want to go to one of their meetups. I'm like, gosh, that sounds fun. It's like a social event for nomads. So it's kind of cool.
Can you plug a few names so people can look them up if they're interested?
Sure. The Escapees RV Club is the main one, or the Escapers. So that's what I'm going to look into.
And they're local or they're all across the US?
No, they're all across the US and they just meet up in different places. I thought that sounded like a lot of fun.
Cool. So I've been really getting into the She Explores podcast. I don't know if you've heard of that one. Every episode, they feature a woman who's done either van life or some sort of alternative living. It has really little to do with finance. It's all about life on the road and the different stories that people have and why they do it and stuff. I find it fascinating.
Oh, I would love to listen to that. I have not yet.
Oh, it's a great one. Check it out.
Yeah, I will.
So let's get into the sailboat life. So then you started living on the sailboat. What was the biggest change for you when you did that?
Yeah, well, that was a big change because it's undergoing a restoration process. So when we first moved on, we didn't have like the main, you know, items like refrigerators or a restroom or something. So that was a huge change. And we joined a gym. So that's what we use to use the restroom and stuff. So that was a pretty big change. But now it has all those components. So it's much more put together.
Does your partner also work as a digital nomad?
No, he has an actual job in San Francisco, but it's pretty flexible. So that's good.
So if you were to get a boat in San Francisco, first of all, where do you get it? And then where do you park it? What marina are you in so you can be convenient to working downtown?
Yeah, so there's actually a lot of marinas in the Bay Area. The problem is that they're 10% live aboard only. It's really hard to get a slip. So that's one of the big issues around here. So some people will just anchor their boat somewhere. So that's what they'll do is they'll anchor it and they'll take a dinghy to shore. It's like really hard to get a live aboard slip. But there are ones that are really close to the city, like only 15 to 20 minutes away. So some people will do that and then they'll, you know, take a bus to the work in the city. Or some people just work on their boat and then go to the gym like me. So, but I do think it's a growing number of people who are doing this.
What does the lifestyle allow you to do?
Travel a lot, which is really nice. Like even though we're not traveling on the boat yet, I just got a van 2 months ago. And so I can take it to parks, I can camp in it, I can travel to different places. And so just the ability to move around is really important to me. And I love being able to do that. So that's been one of the biggest benefits of the nomadic lifestyle.
You guys haven't taken the boat out? Why?
It's been in restoration. So it hasn't been ready to go out on the ocean yet, but it will soon. And we want to go to places like Mexico or Vancouver or Alaska or Hawaii and stuff like that.
It's crazy how long it takes a boat to be fixed up.
I know it does. Some of them don't take as long, but some do. So it just depends on kind of if you buy a newer one or an older one and what kind of condition it's in.
Yeah, doesn't a boat stand for bring out another 1,000?
It does. That's good. You knew that. I learned that recently, actually. It's very true.
But I mean, if that's your primary living space, then it's no different than living in a house and needing to repair roofs and gutters and hot water heaters and all the other crap that goes wrong in houses.
Yeah, exactly. It's that, but on a different level. And then once it's fixed, it'll probably be fixed for a long time. Like it won't probably keep breaking apart because he's been doing all the main systems and refurbishing the whole thing to be able to go on the ocean. So that's the plan.
So what made you pull the trigger and get the van?
Well, I wanted something I could travel on land in because while I like the water, I really like the land and I really like national parks and I like having, you know, a place to kind of call my own and sleep in. And what I love about the van is I can sit in there and work. Like if I don't feel like being in a gym or somewhere like that, I can just drive it and have this little zone in the back where I can sit with my computer and my hotspot and work. So it provides a lot more space and comfort for me. So, and it's little, so it's stealthy and it's not like a huge Sprinter van that's hard to park. It's really a small vehicle. So I really like that about it.
And you have a MiFi?
I do. I have a Verizon MiFi. I can use it on the boat. Sometimes we'll go anchor out somewhere in San Francisco Bay and I can wake up and work on my computer in the morning because I have the hotspot. So that's really fun to be able to just get my laptop and work from a van, a boat, wherever I want to. So that is pretty awesome.
It does sound pretty idyllic.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah. If you're not following her on Instagram, you should. Beautiful photos.
Oh, thank you.
So how much does it cost to use the MiFi and how much data do you get?
So the MiFi is $50 a month for 4 gigs. And I probably use, gosh, it ranges. Sometimes I use half of it, sometimes the whole thing. And if the MiFi doesn't have service, my phone usually has service and I turn that into a hotspot. So I kind of have service wherever I go normally. I even had service at Great Basin National Park. So I sat in my van and I did some work out there. That was kind of cool. I'm like, wow, I can go on a hike and then do my work. I'm not like stuck in the office. So that's kind of
I feel like fun. That kind of defeats the purpose of going on a hike though.
Well, when you're a digital nomad like me, you have to fit in work whenever you can, which is kind of weird. Like some people see me with my computer at a national park and they're like, why do you have that? And I'm like, well, I have to work every day. It doesn't matter like what day it is. Like I'll take weird days off like a Tuesday and then I'll work on a Saturday. The whole lifestyle switches and I work from everywhere and it doesn't matter like where I am. So it's kind of a change and it's interesting. I like it.
Why do you get the MiFi though and not just pay for a more unlimited gigs or something for the Verizon plan?
Yeah, the unlimited one is $80. So I probably eventually should just do that. But I also have my phone, which is the Project Fi Google phone. And sometimes that works when the Verizon doesn't. So I kind of like having both. And so I keep both at a lower price point instead of one at a higher price point. Because if one doesn't work, the Verizon doesn't work, then I wouldn't have a fallback.
Shout out to Google Fi. I have that as well, and it's awesome.
It's totally awesome. Yeah, it's a great phone plan. You can travel with it and everything, so it's fantastic.
And the prices don't change. Like, it's just...
I know.
It's the same everywhere you go.
Highly recommend it.
So how did you buy your van?
So I bought it off of Craigslist. I had been looking for that particular type, and amazingly, a couple days later, it popped up in Sacramento, which is really close to me, and so I jumped on it and I was like, I want that one. It's like my dream one. It's like the right price and it's small and old, but I just really like the quirky character of it.
What kind of van did you get?
So it's a Chevy Astro van, and they used to make these funky conversion style vans in the 90s. So it has all these wood paneling and crazy interior lighting, and it's just quirky. It has a TV. So it's just kind of one of those funny 90s vans. And so I just had to have it.
How much was it?
It was $5,600. So it was pretty cheap. And it only had like about 57,000 miles or so.
So if someone was looking to purchase a van, is that like a normal price? I'm assuming that you've done some research, or you did research on it prior, and you have talked to a bunch of people with vans. Like, what do you need to know when you're purchasing a van?
Yeah, so it really ranges in price point. Some people buy very old vans for like $1,000, but they go all the way up to really high rate for a Sprinter van. So those can cost, you know, a ton of money. If you buy like a Sprinter camper conversion, it can be like $100,000. So I know, I saw one recently. It's a Winnebago Revel Sprinter van, and it's like $150,000. So yeah, it's crazy.
Why a van and not an RV?
I just like how small they are. RVs are just so big, and I feel like I'd have a hard time parking it. I like something that fits in a normal parking spot. So that's why I wanted that. Some of the RVs just get way too big and cumbersome. And I just like, you know, the small nature of the van. It's easy for me to drive.
So was the van primarily a purchase for you, or something that you and your partner were going to do to live together?
It's for both of us. It's just whenever we travel, we have somewhere to sleep that's a bit more comfortable than the Prius, which is his vehicle. And it provides us a way to go camping and exploring and have this little van to sleep in. So yeah, and sometimes I'll take trips on my own too. So I guess it's for both of us.
Are you guys committed to this alternative lifestyle? Will you ever go back to a house?
I don't know. Some people ask me that. You know, the only kind of house I can think of at this point would be a tiny house on some property with a lot of forest and maybe a stream, but somewhere really beautiful in nature. But my dream is kind of to have, you know, the sailboat, the van, the tiny house. That's my ultimate dream, is like all these tiny houses. Depending on my mood, I can go to a different one. That would be like the only kind of house I could think of right now. But, you know, anything could change in the future.
What do you like so much about the idea of tiny living?
Well, I love that it doesn't tie me down as much. I don't have as many bills I have to worry about paying. I feel like a huge sense of freedom. I can move around whenever I want and see new things and travel. And I think just being free from the financial obligations is a pretty big deal to me, because, you know, having a rent or a house payment is pretty expensive unless you're independently wealthy. So just not having to deal with that, and not having to deal with all the cleaning involved, because I hate cleaning. And so having small homes is a little bit more manageable for me. And I like being outside a lot. So that's another part of it, is just being outside and just seeing the beauty of the world. And I just like that a lot. Like just being inside kind of when you have to, and being outside most of the time. So yeah.
I live in a small apartment, and I do really like the convenience of small place to clean. It's so nice.
I know. Totally. Yeah, I hate cleaning. I'm like, I can barely keep my van clean.
Yeah, compared to a big house we used to have prior. And an example of this, we went camping this past weekend on Orcas Island, which is a beautiful island off the coast of Seattle. And it took 2 minutes to pack, because I can see all of the camping stuff in plain sight. There's nowhere for it to go. We have it kind of stowed away underneath our stairs. But, you know, everything is out there. You just grab it and go.
Yeah, totally. It's so nice to have such a convenient access to everything, you know, where everything is at all times.
Yes.
So that's really nice.
The downside, though, is feeling confined. And, you know, an example, like right now, I'm recording a podcast, which I do multiple times per week at night. And my poor husband, he has to tiptoe around, and we have to, you know, rearrange pretty much his entire evening to accommodate this. How do you do that with a partner? How do you live in such a small space? And I'm assuming that you have obligations that you have to do when he's in there.
Yeah, usually it's interesting, because usually I work, you know, during the day only. It's kind of unusual that I'd be doing stuff at night. So usually my schedule would be, I would start working at like 7:30, and maybe I work till 3:30 or 4 on my computer. And I do that at the gym normally. And then we would regroup with each other at night to have dinner. And so we do have that kind of traditional evening dinner time together most nights, which is really nice.
Aww.
Yeah, so I guess you just get used to being in that small space together. And now when I house at a big house, it's kind of weird. I'm like, where are you? Like, I'm cooking dinner and I can't see you and talk to you. So you get really used to like being just talking distance to each other. So I've liked it so far. I haven't had any big problems with it yet. So that's good.
More props to you. I downsized from a 3-bedroom house to a 2-bedroom apartment to a studio. And I was miserable. Like, it was awful, but I wasn't committed to it. And it was, I knew it was only temporary. So like I had my stuff piled everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
And I am very attached to my stuff, probably too attached. And so I was like, cannot handle living in this tiny space with all my stuff boxed up. Like, this is not okay.
Totally. That would be so hard. Because you would feel like you have to do something with your stuff all the time, you know, because it's just there waiting to be dealt with. So that would be tricky.
So you guys house it as well, which is awesome because it seems like you are doing every single lifestyle alternative living thing that's available. And the ones that you haven't done yet, you want to do, like tiny living. So let's talk about house sitting. Tell us more about it. How do you get into that?
Yeah. So house sitting, I first got into through word of mouth, through relatives and friends who live down here. And then I joined a website called Rover. And that is something that connects pet owners to people. And so I got quite a few house sitting gigs off of that. And it was hilarious because some of these houses are worth like $3 million. Like, they are incredible houses and I'm getting paid to live in them, like in San Francisco. So I just always thought that was kind of hilarious. And so right now I'm pet sitting actually the rest of August. And that gives me a chance to just really focus on work because sometimes I get distracted if I'm traveling or doing other things. So this is like my work time. Like, for the next 3 weeks, I'm going to buckle down and really try to work on stuff. So yeah. So house sitting really like gives me that opportunity. So that's nice.
Do you do House Sitters of America or any of those other house sitting programs?
I don't. I only do Rover right now just because some of those other ones are not paid jobs. So I like getting the little stipend of getting paid to do it because I'm trying to make money in all the ways I can think of. I haven't done any of that kind of house exchange sites yet, but I know a lot of travelers love doing those. I know some people who do that full time. So yeah, so it's just a matter of preference, I guess.
We've had a few Rover sitters on the podcast and I hire Rover sitters to watch my dog when we're gone. And awesome. The amount that they can charge is crazy.
Yeah, some of them charge a lot.
So do you have any tips on like finding the right amount to charge?
Well, what I usually do is look at what other people are charging in my area. I probably still charge on kind of a low scale for San Francisco, I would guess, because I charge between 35 and 45 a day for 24 hours. And that includes a couple of walks and stuff. So I guess I do a lot of local researching and I look at Craigslist and I look at what other Rover sitters are charging. And I try to be kind of in the bottom middle of that. But I do see some that charge a lot more than that than I charge. So yeah, but I'd also live in a really expensive area. So I think people are willing to pay a little bit more around here too.
I think you're charging way too low as someone who regularly pays Rover sitters. Because the thing is, when people need a sitter, they're stuck. Like, I'm traveling out of state and I need someone to watch my dog. And especially around the holidays and things like that, it gets, you know, last minute. That would be a good time if you're thinking about getting started with Rover, like if you're willing to do it over a holiday, Labor Day weekend, places when people are gone, that would be a really good one.
Yeah, that's so true. And everybody always tells me I charge too low. So maybe I should think about that.
You totally should. You totally should. Because our Rover sitter who kicked a hole in our tub, she was charging like, I think it was $50 a day. Whereas the best Rover sitter that we have, she charges $30 or $35 a day. It's crazy. So I've been giving her big tips because I'm like, you're so amazing. I don't want you to leave. But she probably has no idea. You're probably an amazing Rover sitter, yet you're charging so low. I don't know why.
Right. I don't know either. I should try to up it.
Yeah, I mean, you should. I'm not telling you that. I don't want all my sitters to be like, oh, suddenly I'm doubling my price. But, you know, that's market rate. People will pay it for someone that they trust.
Right. That's so true. Yeah, I should readjust those things.
For sure. So are there any other, you know, you do van life, you do sailboat life, you are a digital nomad. We're going to get into that in a little bit. You want to do tiny living. You do house sitting. Are there any other kind of like lifestyle design things you do? Like, I'm imagining, you know, are you a vegan or you're like keto or you like do essential oils or like yoga or something?
No, I just am really into the outdoor sports. I guess that's not super unusual, but just the hiking, backpacking, surfing, you know, anything that's, and I do yoga and I love exercising, but pretty much anything outdoorsy I like to do. It's my favorite hobby of all.
Have you ever taken an REI class?
No, but I really want to, or do one of their campouts or take their first aid class or something. But it's on my radar one day.
I do too. And we were just hanging out with some friends on Friday, and the husband, he left his job to be a mountain bike instructor. That's his passion, which is so cool. But then it started inspiring me to get into mountain biking. And I heard there's like women's only mountain biking groups that I may be interested in starting.
Oh, that would be really great, especially in Seattle. I'm sure there's beautiful spots there.
Yeah, apparently. And you can do it year round. But, you know, the last time I rode a bike was in a Walmart and I almost fell over into the aisle. So we have a long way to go with that.
Right. That's a good hobby to get into. That's great.
Yeah. Gwen is biking up a storm over in Minneapolis.
Yeah, it's not mountain. It's, you know, the opposite of mountain biking, because Google calls Minneapolis flat as a pancake. So it's more like distance biking. But since I moved here, was it 5 months ago? I've been working my way up to like 15-mile bike rides around the lakes around here. And I'm getting into shape, losing a little bit of weight, losing a little bit of inches off my waist. So I'm feeling pretty good these days.
That's amazing. That's a long bike ride. Congrats. That's awesome.
Thank you. I should qualify. I feel better these days when I'm not struck down by a mysterious flu that makes all of my muscles hurt.
Right. Oh, that sounds awful.
It wasn't fun.
No, she's getting better, slowly climbing from the sickness.
I have not been biking in a week, and it's killing me.
Oh, my goodness. I'm glad you're feeling better.
Thank you. I am glad that I'm feeling better as well.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, with that, let's talk about being a digital nomad. So, Kristen, I want to know, too, how are you making money on your own right now?
So I have the blog, The Wayward Home, which I've had for a year, and just monetizing that now through ad revenue, and I'm trying to learn more about affiliate sales and affiliate marketing. So that's my next goal, is to get better at affiliate. And then I do just a bunch of random freelance writing. Like, I've done some copywriting for Marriott. I'm going to do copywriting for some websites. And then I pitch stories to travel magazines and lifestyle magazines. So I'm doing like a combination of stuff. And I'm going to do some voiceover work in August and, you know, house sitting. So it's cobbling together just really random income sources right now.
So question for you, with the blogging income, I've been blogging for 3 years and just recently cracked $3,000 a month in revenue, and it's hard.
Yeah.
So is that a significant source of your revenue right now, or you're more hopeful for the potential?
Well, right now it's $1,000 a month. So, you know, it's not like a sustainable to support me in everything I want to do income, but I see potential in it, and I think, and I'm hoping it'll keep growing. So I'm focusing pretty hard on that, as well as my other freelance writing gigs. But I know making money blogging is really hard, and it takes a ton of time and effort, which I'm finding out. But I'm driven, and I really want to make it happen. So I have big goals in that arena.
Awesome. Yeah, so we had a blogging mastermind for our podcast this summer, which was one of the reasons it forced me to really focus down and double down on how I could make my blog more profitable with the words that I already had. Which it worked. So we will link to the show notes of our blogging freebie. We put together like a 2-page cheat sheet of everything about Gwen and my blogs that you would probably need to know if you're starting a blog. We'll put that in the show notes for sure. But okay, so moving on from blogging. So copywriting, how did you get these gigs?
I got a lot of these gigs through Facebook groups, like writer-oriented Facebook groups that I'm part of. So that's how I've actually got a ton of them. And then other ones I've gotten simply by pitching magazines that I want to write for. So I think of a story idea, I find the right editor, and I just send a cold pitch. And so that's the other way of getting writing jobs. And then some of them I've gotten through online writing websites. And there's actually one out there that, you know, I don't have the name on the tip of my tongue, but it's aimed at digital nomads. And so I applied for a writing job, and that's where I'm getting some of my website copywriting that I'm working on right now. So it's really, you know, a combination of sources.
Would you mind sharing that with us after, and we'll put it in the show notes?
Yes.
Awesome. So you got laid off, and then did you immediately start looking for work? Like, did you try other things that didn't work out, or did you get hooked up with these writing jobs right away?
Nope. I actually started immediately doing voiceover work, which lasted me about 8 months. So I had that supplemented by unemployment benefits. And so at that time, I was also just applying for jobs left and right, because I thought I needed another full-time job. So I was applying for jobs. I was applying for radio jobs. I auditioned for radio jobs and I didn't get them. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I've been in radio for 14 years and I can't get a radio job. It was kind of depressing. And so I just started eventually rethinking it. And I'm like, I have to figure out my own stuff. And so that's when I started looking into blogging and copywriting and getting writing assignments. That happened maybe a year after I was laid off.
Voiceover meaning, you know, Fiverr voiceover work?
No, it was through a friend of mine. She was working for a company that's creating a new artificial voice. And it's hard to explain what exactly it is, but I record lines for them and then they take my voice and they create a synthesized voice. It's
really weird. Is that kind of like Siri?
Kind of is, but I think they're going to use it for other applications. But I work for them on and off, and I've been doing that for like 2 years. And I'll start doing that again in August after like a 6 month break. So it just kind of comes and goes.
So what are your short-term goals?
Short-term goals is to get the blog making a more of a sustainable income. So we had a cruising budget that's in our minds. It's very low. So our goal is to spend maybe $40 a day only. And that would be $15,000 a year for two people. So it's super low budget. And it'd be really cool if I could make like double that with my blog, only passive income, you know, just as a way to sustain a traveling lifestyle. So that's kind of the short-term goal. I mean, if it made way more, that'd be cool, but it's so hard to make a ton of money with a blog that if it was just double, you know, what I have now, it'd be pretty cool. So that's my first short-term goal that I'm working super hard on every day. So that's probably the main goal.
And would your partner leave his job too for you guys to travel full-time?
Yeah, he would, especially if I had a sustainable income. So that's kind of my dream. But his job is kind of cool that he can leave for like 10 months and then come back and work for like 2 months. So he's lucky that he has a flexibility like that. But I would like to be someone who is able to bring in like a full-time income from online as a nomad, because then we could just go anywhere in the world. It would be awesome.
Have you thought to look into Etsy or any of the other side hustles, Amazon, FBA?
No, just because the blog takes so much of my time and effort right now that I don't have time to look into a different one. But maybe at some point, I mean, I want to write books. So that's something else it takes forever to make money on, but we'll see what happens. Yeah. And I may have to look into other income sources in the future too.
What are your long-term goals for your life?
Long-term is just to, you know, make a sustainable income that allows me to just keep traveling as long as I want. That's all I can really think of right now, weirdly, as a long-term goal, and just have enough for retirement and whatever that means. Just a comfortable living without having to go back to a 9-to-5 job. I guess that's my overarching long-term goal. Yeah. So hopefully I can make that happen with the digital nomad stuff. You know, it isn't easy, but I have a lot of drive to make it work.
What keeps you up at night? What are you worried about?
Weirdly, not a lot, I guess. I mean, I did take like a month off and my income dropped, and that made me a little bit nervous. But then I started getting more work for August. And then I was like, wow, I don't have a rent payment. It's okay. You know, that's one of the joys of having such a tiny kind of lifestyle, is if you do run out of money for like a month, you're not going to crash and burn. You can just work on making it the next month. Otherwise, I sleep pretty well. I don't think or worry about too much stuff. So that is a blessing.
So before we go into the final two, I know you are very well connected in the tiny living space, especially because you featured all these amazing people on your site. Can you give us maybe a handful of people, like two or three people, that their stories have really amazed and inspired you, and just give us a quick snippet about them?
So I recently interviewed a 6-year-old woman named Barbara, whose house burned down in the Santa Rosa wildfires, which were about 1 year ago. She lived in a beautiful house. It was a 4,000 square foot house, somewhere she'd lived for a very long time. And so it was a huge loss for her. But, you know, instead of staying in Santa Rosa and really mourning that loss, she used her insurance money to buy a van. So she's, for the past year, she's been roaming around in her van, and she has like such a positive attitude. And, you know, she's now forcibly retired, but, you know, she has enough income to keep her going. But she has such, you know, this amazing, passionate drive about her. And one thing she told me was, she was like, I knew something crazy would happen when I turned 60. I didn't know it would be van life, you know, but she's out there just having a really awesome time. And I just think it's so cool that she, you know, made lemonade out of lemons. And I love inspiring stories like that. So that's one. And then another one that was super interesting to me was a family that makes figures doing an Amazon FBA business, and they travel full time in an RV with two children. And I really like that story because I hear a lot from people that don't think they can do this because they have kids. And those are comments that I see a lot online. But so many people are doing this with kids. It's really interesting. They're finding remote work, they're downsizing, and they're living small enough that maybe they don't need as big of an income as they would need in a city. And so I think more and more families are hitting the road and or sailing. There's, you know, families that have taken their kids off of land and have been sailing for like 10 years, which is equally amazing that they fit, you know, on a 42-foot boat with five people for 10 years. I'm like, whoa, that really blows my mind.
We had somebody on the podcast who does van life with her son, and they travel around and do that, which I think is really cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, Bianca Smith. We'll definitely link to that in the show notes.
I've talked to her on the phone. I think she is so awesome. I'm really glad you guys talked to her.
Yeah, she's great. So we talked to her, Christy Wolf. She makes tiny houses as an Airbnb entrepreneur. So she had a Hobbit house that she did, a fire lookout, a treehouse in Hawaii. She's really cool. So if you haven't had her on your blog, you totally should.
Should. I know who she is too. So I should look her up.
But I totally got one of our guests from your site, Ellen Rose. Do you know her?
Oh, yay. I do. She's great too.
Yeah. So Sailor does Amazon FBA. So we have a lot of crossover. That's really cool.
We do. That's awesome.
Okay. So final two, Gwen?
Final two.
Kristen, if people want to learn more about you or read on your blog, where can they find you?
They can find me at thewaywardhome.com. And that is the same across Instagram and Facebook. That's all there is to it.
All right. So Kristen, if you could have anything, do anything, what is your wildest dream?
Wildest dream. Well, I really want, I don't know if it's super wild, but I really want to sail to the South Pacific. And I want to just, you know, be in that part of the world and run around on the beach and play drums and eat the food and just really hang out there. So that's like one of my definite big dream goals is to go there, which I think will happen in the future. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed that we'll cross the ocean. It takes 30 days and we'll end up over there. So that would be just amazing to me.
I think with your drive, you're definitely going to accomplish that.
I sure hope so.
Ironic, given that you're going to be sailing there, not driving there, but.
Totally.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. Go to our website, firedrillpodcast.com, to continue the discussion and get the link to our private Facebook group.
If you like us, leave us a review on iTunes. If you're like me, you have no idea how to do that. So in the podcast app or in iTunes, search for Fire Drill Podcast, find it, click the reviews tab, and write something to make my mother proud of me. We read every single review and want to say thank you from the bottom of our hearts for making this podcast possible.